last time we did this, you know, the atmosphere was rather charged. Some of you may have been there. You know, and we played the Imperial March, and we had some fun with it and the whole thing. And, you know, about a month ago, I was thinking, you know, this was all booked, and I was thinking, man, it's going to be way different this year, right? It's going to be so mellow because people kind of understand each other now, and we kind of understand, you know, we're kind of past that bumpy transition, and everybody gets it. But instead, it's 2-12, right?
It's 2-10.
Or 2-10, yeah. Sorry. Don't get ahead of me. No, I'm sure it's going to be fine. It's the Red Sox, right? They're going to win the next two. Go ahead now. Do your intro now. Sorry about that.
All right. Well, to marry a couple of bad analogies, as Mark said to me in there, this is not his first Pitch Docs rodeo, so he knows kind of what to expect out here tonight. But please, a warm welcome for the president of the Toronto Blue Jays, Mark Shapiro.
You already gave away the next two games.
Yeah,
huh?
Sorry about that. Sorry about that, Mark.
So things couldn't get worse, and Stevens already got us at 2-12.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
That's great. Okay. I will tell you this. That normally I turn down, I won't speak during the season because, you know, I've been through it enough, 25, 26 seasons, to know that three games fans can react and it can be a tough speaking thing. So I figured, hey, you know, start of the season, I have a speaking, doing this tonight, Pitch Talks, in front of smart baseball fans, that maybe that will dull things. And how bad can it be if I speak during the first, like, 10 games of the season, 11 games of the season? Sure enough. Steven gives away two more games in the first 30 seconds. I'm out here.
But I think
immediately
that means
go from 2-10 to 2-12 before we even play the games.
But I think he's given you a win in the day game
I
Thursday.
I think that's right. So, yeah, that's exactly right.
How much does this wear on you and the staff? And I mean, you
know. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're not human, if it doesn't wear on you. I mean, it's one of those things where you try to self-talk yourself into, you know, we played 7% of our games. You've been through, you know, stretches like this a bunch of times in your career. You've been through expectations when you've struggled. But you want it so bad. You know, you want it so bad. You believe in the players. You know why you believe in those guys. You felt like you felt in spring training and felt like, you know, the same thing Steven was talking about. So many reasons to be optimistic and positive at that point. So, you know, each one of those losses kind of, you know, hurts, you know, a little more. I try to do two things. One, remember that your responsibility of a leader is to stay strong and stay positive for the people around you within the organization, you know, most importantly. And two, get back to what I can control, which is we have a lot of things we can control. And then I think the final one is to remember it is 7% of our games. It's not, you know, there's still a lot of baseball left to be played. And like Steven said, there are still a lot of really good things that have occurred, just one astronomical, you know, failure at a level that it hasn't allowed us to feel good about much.
Do you have any kind of point of comparison for this, Mark? Have you, you know, again, one side of things being very, very good and one side of them being extremely bad?
I was, you know, I got a text message from Chris Antonetti the other day, and he said, hey, things haven't started for either of us the way we, you know, the way we had hoped. He's the Indians GM, in case anyone here doesn't know. But, and he said, you know, looking at our team, he knows it'll be better. And I told him, he said, we've been through some tough stuff before. I said, yeah, we have, but I can't remember it feeling like this. So maybe that's just the nature of, I don't spend a lot of time, you know, unless I can learn from it, I don't spend a lot of time dwelling on it. I try to move on to the next thing. But, and I think this, that I've definitely been through plenty of times that we've been, you know, gone through 10 games like this. What I haven't done is started a season like this. And everything is obviously accentuated. Everything is heightened. You know, the importance, everything feels, you know, a greater sense of magnitude at the start of a season.
Have you spent any time with Gibby or any players individually to just get a gauge for, is confidence still high that they can turn this around?
Yeah, I mean, I have. We were, you know, Ross and I were talking to Gibby today and, you know, every day, you know, to some extent. You know, part of what makes him good is that he's incredibly consistent and even keel. And, you know, I think, you know, talking to Gibby today, I think he's like, he said to me at one point, he said, you know, it has to get better. I was like, well, yeah, it actually does. Like, there's only one thing I can promise you. It will not stay this bad. Guarantee. I can guarantee that. And I will never guarantee anything. Trust me. So Gibby, you know, his own, you know, wisdom was kind of like, you're right. It does. It's going to get better than this. The players, You know, I think that, I mean, this is a strong group of guys that really believe in each other and believe in themselves. Just the fact that there hasn't been finger pointing, the fact that these guys are searching for solutions rather than, you know, pointing fingers on why the problems are happening is a good thing. But I think there's some shock, too. You know, there, it's been an incredible, to some extent, kind of, you know, whatever, 3 months of just a pure adrenaline, you know, a season and a half ago, and then a good season of baseball last year with, you know, even better postseason up to the ALCS and some incredible moments. So I think they recognize both the track records and the talent in the room and the character of the guys. And there's some disbelief at where we are.
How do you break the tension, Mark, with it? Because, you know, baseball is the one sport where trying harder doesn't make it better.
I've thought about that. You know, I kind of was talking about that with Ross today. You remember Larry Durker when he was manager of the Astros? He had broke out the Hawaiian shirts, and he, like, you know, made them. That was, like, pre-Joe Madden.
I look forward to seeing Tulo in a Hawaiian shirt.
Is so, that, and his comment was, you ever seen anyone unhappy in a Hawaiian shirt? So, I don't, you know, I think we're not a gimmicky group of guys. We tend to be a pretty serious group of guys. I have thought about that. You know, I'm not sure Gibby is ready to go there yet, or Ross, and ultimately.
But you do have some very intense guys, right?
That's
one of the that's one of the hallmarks of this group. They're very serious guys. They are very intense. They're very committed. They're taking BP till.
And they're, I was telling you before we went out here that, you know, some of the guys you may think are the most intense as far as teammates go are not the same with their teammates. There's a little more levity with their teammates. They're a little more – baseball still is that, you know, game where they recognize, too, it's 162. And
the Cubs talk about a moment in the rain delay of Game 7 of the World Series. The Indians had just tied the game. The rain delay hits. They go inside, and the Cubs are you know, worried that it's slipping away. And Jason Hayward is the guy who grabs his teammates and throws them in the weight room and gives them a speech. And the words weren't necessarily that profound, but he was the guy to take the reins. Who's the take the reins guy of this group if they need it?
I mean, it's probably either JD or Tulo, and JD's hurt right now, so that definitely takes something out of him. But I think there's a group of guys, I mean, that take collective ownership of the team. Kevin Pillar, certainly from respect of what he's accomplished, how he's gone about getting to where he is. A bunch of our starters, you know, there's a group of seven or eight guys that kind of represent a leadership core. And leadership in baseball is so different from other sports. I mean, you have the Hunter Pence stories, you have that story, but more often than not, you rarely get the big speech. It's more about the way you carry yourself. It's about the kind of teammate you are. But it's about how you carry, you know, how you live day to day. And I think to some extent, you know, how dependable and reliable are you as a teammate and as a person?
So a couple days ago, I get a notification on my phone. And as we know, if you don't get a notification on your phone, it didn't happen. This is how news travels right now. And there was no attribution. It just said Blue Jays president Mark Shapiro says something to the effect of they're not looking for outside help at this point. And again, so I said, okay, that's good. I can ask him about it in a couple of days and see if he actually said that. So how do you balance the urge to try to make everything right away versus doing something you might regret later on? And these kinds of things don't normally happen in April where teams are looking outside.
I normally wouldn't even respond to that question, but it seemed so absurd to me. So I did go back to my office and pulled up like every trade in the history of baseball in April. And there's been like almost no consequential trades in April. So it seemed odd to me that someone would even ask that question. You know, as much as in jobs like these, you know, you want to feel like you have some impact and some control. You ultimately have to kind of temper your emotion and your momentum from making decisions and know that there's a time. And this isn't the time. You know, this is the time to go back to, you know, why we believe what we believe to get to this point. This is the time to look at the track records of the players. This is the time to know that, as Gibby said, it's not going to be this bad, you know. And it's a time to think about, you know, those players when they've been going well, how much you believed in them, why you believed in them, the analytics, everything, you know, that would go into making decisions. And 7%, you know, of the games have been played. You know, we will have a long time to go before there's time to make decisions, either whether that's, you know, juggling things or whether that's, you know, looking for help from the outside.
Yeah, you mentioned Donaldson and the injury, Mark. And you've had three significant injuries in this stretch, Sanchez, Happ, obviously, and Donaldson. I know you're still gathering information in a couple of those circumstances, but what can you tell us about the three guys tonight?
So we're still putting all the pieces together on HAP, but I can tell you, and you'll be the first ones to know, we are incredibly optimistic. So that, yeah, that's obviously crucial. So I think tomorrow we'll have a lot more detail on JHAP, but it certainly looks like it's going to be a positive outcome, so with very minimal time. Sanch was just, looking for a longer-term solution to the blister and looking at a manipulation that was a minor procedure so that, he, again, should not miss much time, if any at all, maybe one start.
So this isn't a Rich Hill. Again, people are, Rich Hill's in the news. People with long memories here will remember Al Leiter, who had terrible blister issues. This is something that you don't think is going to become chronic.
Well, I think, what Sanch did was kind of look at a procedure that could hopefully avoid something like that. So I think, that's a positive. And JD, I think he and we all learned like a strong lesson, which is, with calf muscles in particular, because in order to begin any movement, you activate that muscle, especially any quick movement. So we need to take the proper time to let that heal. The good thing is, while he did aggravate it, it's not, a major tear is a real injury that we need to give proper time to. But, again, I think it's that also is, made worse by the position that we're in.
Do you know any sense in what that started in spring training, obviously, or before spring training. Any sense of what the time frame is? But obviously you're going to be careful now.
Think I do have a sense.
Okay. It's no one. It's okay. Just us. Go ahead.
But that's it. Yeah.
And then get stonewalled. That was me. Hello. Sorry.
But, since we're just the three of us talking.
Yeah.
And none of this will make it anywhere on
and
social
internet,
media.
Yeah.
No, I think, you put both a player, especially in light of a recurrence of an injury, you put a player in a bad position as well as us. I think it's I prefer to go to the Bill Belichick type, He hurt his leg.
Bill Belichick doesn't do events
better.
Like this, I got to tell you, Mark. He rarely appears before live audiences. You don't see a lot of Belichick football talks.
Can we do one last one before we go to Q&A?
Sure,
okay,
yeah.
One last one, a little bit off topic, because I'm sure.
Hello. Yeah.
Before we get over to Ashley and Carly, you and I spoke briefly in the back, and I think for all of us, we all go to the ballpark. Some of us have been going there since it opened in 1989. Significant part of your job that people don't see as much of is the ballpark side, the business side. What can you tell us about what is the vision? What's the goal for whatever renovations you may undertake at Rogers Center?
Yeah, I think we're getting to a point where I feel like we're getting closer to telling and showing everybody some ideas. A big part of what we've done is kind of listen to our fans. I do two or three different things. One, go out and look at all the trends in ballparks, stadiums, arenas, throughout sport to try to understand, where are the trends going and how do we think about, what would be good not just for now but for the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years. The second piece would say, okay, now bring that back to Toronto. What, needs to be important to recognize the uniqueness and individuality of a Toronto fan base, and how do we ensure those trends resonate with the fans here, which means talking to our fans about those things, which we'll continue to do even more. And then it comes down to kind of creating the themes and the concepts around what we want to do. So the easiest way I say is, like, we want to turn a stadium into a ballpark. So a stadium is kind of...
I think that would go over very well.
Yeah.
So the stadium, is symmetrical. It's the same, all the way around. Somewhat generic experience. And it was built in an era where this was normal. It's not a criticism. It's the same experience whether you're watching in one seat or another seat across the field and up a deck. So this would be trying to create a very targeted experience for the fan that wants to watch the game hardcore from base to base and score the game, but also a fan that wants to be at the game at the coolest bar in the neighborhood that happens to be inside the stadium and kind of occasionally watch the game, to a family that wants to bring kids and wants the kids to have something to do. It's doing all those things inside of a ballpark to create neighborhoods, to create a reason and a compelling reason to be there in addition to the team, knowing that the number one lever on the field is absolutely always the team. So in a more intimate character experience that I think speaks to both the heritage and history of the Blue Jays, of baseball in Canada, you know, of the Toronto fan and the Canadian pride, and then, you know, a targeted segment experience. And we're getting closer to rolling those concepts out and trying to put funding in a plan. One of the biggest challenges is logistical, which is we're going to have less than 120 days a year to actually work on it. So how do you do that, you know, during seasons? Not do you do that over three off seasons? I mean, we still have to figure all that out.
I have to ask the grass question for people out here because somebody's going to ask.
Really?
You. Well, it's going to be illegal next year. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Where are we with that, Mark?
The legality?
Yeah, the legality. Well, yeah, you're,
dispensaries in the stadium
would be awesome.
There's probably a better person
to answer
that
than me. You know, where are we?
Yeah,
still a discussion point?
It's still a discussion point. I think what we're doing is figuring out the general cost of that along with all the other things we want to do and then deciding, you know, not just us, but, you know, hopefully the players and the fans too, where that fits. It's a much bigger issue than I had realized when I came here, which is the stadium was never built with drainage, so there's no drainage. You know, we have to consider that with the type of roof. It's not that easy to put grass in mid-March and keep it alive until, you know, you would play 2 to 3 weeks later, and then really until 6 weeks before the dome opens. That is a significant feat. That's the short answer. The long answer is you can do anything. So, I mean, if you pay for it, you know, you can do anything. So the one thing I've realized is the cost of grass is going to be enormous. And it's a question of where does that fit in the menu of things that we want to do? And we're still working through that.
We're going to do a question and answer. I'm going to call the first round. Jason, have at it.
Hey, Mark, gentlemen.
Hey, Jason.
Mark, certainly feel for you right now. It's. I guess the first question would be, did you rent or buy?
I bought. I'm in it for the long haul, man.
It's a pretty strong market either way, so I think things are good.
That is true.
You kind of answered my first question, but I'll bring up a couple of names and just throw them at the wall. Jake Peavy, Doug Pfister, Colby Lewis. I mean, Angel Pagan. Not so much him, but just... if Jay is down for a while, or if Aaron is down for a while, are you looking at that prospect right now? Is one of those guys maybe, or something along those lines, something we want to start thinking about?
So, yeah, I mean, those are you. I think you always keep track of every guy that's available. The guys you mentioned are unsigned free agents, and with a matter of, you know, the reality of starting pitching, what it would take for those guys to get in shape, even if they've been playing catch and throwing bullpens to a college catcher or a high school catcher, that's different than preparing for a major league season. So I'm optimistic that we're not going to have to answer that question, you know, based on the information I know. But yes, we're on track. We're on top of those things. And, you know, I feel like Matt Latos is probably ahead of those guys as far as where he is. He's out and stretching and pitching every fifth day and to some extent projects to do as well as those guys and is 29. So, you know, there's a similar type of guy that we brought into spring training and signed and is starting every fifth day for us in Buffalo.
Perfect. Well, thank you for the question. I'm glad you bought.
We're glad to have you around for the long haul. Look at that. And you were worried about coming here. Look at this lovely reception that you're getting. Sadia is next. Sadia, where are you from?
Mississauga.
All right.
Thank you so much for doing this. My question is, what's your message to Blue Jays fans right now? And more importantly, what's your message to the Blue Jays players in the clubhouse when they face Boston tomorrow?
Yeah. I mean, I think to fans, you know how much everybody cares, you know how hard everybody's working. You know, that would be the predominant message. You know, the other part is, you know, go back and think about, you know, what Dan said, which is, you know, a 1-9 start, you know, a spot during the season can happen to one of the greatest teams in the history, you know, of the Blue Jays, that there are five teams in the playoffs now, and a lot of those things you're hearing from media about the history of teams that start this way is based off a history when there were two or three teams and not five. You know, not to say it doesn't diminish, you know, the importance of it and how disappointed and how bitter that we feel, but recognize everybody cares and everybody's working hard. To the players, you know, I'm not sure there's much to say. I mean, listen, if these guys didn't already have pride if they didn't already understand what it takes to be a champion. You wouldn't have appreciated them and been cheering for them the way you have the past 2 years. If you have to, you know, go and rally major league athletes, then you pick the wrong athletes. You know, these guys are trying. They care. They're working hard. I think the most important thing to say to them is that we believe in you. You know, that's what they need to hear.
Thanks, Adia. We actually, just to go off script a little bit, you said you make sure you have to pick the right athletes. If they're not, you know, worried or wanting to make things better without a pep talk from you, then you pick the wrong ones. Earlier, we had Malcolm Johnston from Toronto Life, who's an author. He went home with Josh. He stayed with him for a couple days. And he said that when he first met Josh, there was a lot of posturing, a lot of not, he said he didn't pee on my leg, but... and kind of stopped. He said he shook his hand and stared him in the eyes for 8 seconds. Similar interaction when you first met Josh?
I think when I first met Josh, he was ripping me for being a Princeton football player and making fun of making fun of the level of college football I played. He's you know, I told this to him the other day. I mean, he's sometimes the emotion that he shows and that kind of bubbles out with him hides the fact that he is a really, really, really smart guy. I mean, you know, he is, particularly when it comes to talking about baseball and hitting, but that intelligence would transfer to anything he chose to focus on. He's just a smart guy. And so when I talk to him, you know, I'm often listening, you know, trying to learn from him about hitting, about the things that he's passionate about. Still a young guy, so still learning a lot. But and an incredible competitor, obviously, and I think maybe that emotion and that competitiveness can be disarming to people. But you know, I think I choose to walk into every situation, whether it's a room like this or a player like that, and think you got to earn respect. You know, no one's going to give it to you because of the title you've got or what you've done in the past. So that's the way I approach him, and I enjoy being around him. I learn something from him every time I talk to him.
Has he ever challenged you to anything? I know he's really competitive. So, what did you guys play, ping pong?
I would not play ping pong. He and Darwin Barney are deadly. My son is dying to get to the point where he can play those guys in ping pong. So, you know, they have that the challenge board in the clubhouse, and those two guys are right up top. It would not be much of a match. I would say that is something that, you know, to think about, like the greatest guys. The greatest baseball players are great competitors. And it doesn't matter, you know, what it is, whether it's a game, you know, of cards or whether it's, you know, ping pong or whether it's Monopoly, those guys are looking to win and they don't take losing easy. And so, I mean, I would tell you that if you get around professional athletes, guys who are the best at what they do, especially someone like him who's fueled by that desire to be the best, that competitiveness comes out no matter what you do.
Thank you. All right. Who's first over here? Okay.
Hi, Ron. Thank you. I'm just wondering, with the system, it seems that it's a little bit depleted with the major trades that have happened the last couple of years. How confident are you with the prospects coming up, particularly an Anthony Alford, Dalton right. Pompey, and so forth?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I appreciate you answering it because it's something I'm passionate about and excited to talk about. I would say this, that we're better now than we were a year ago. You know, we're not where we need to be. I've seen it, what it looks like, you know, when you're at that point where you got guys going back to AA that should be going to AAA and guys are going back to AAA that should be going to the big leagues and you're backing up prospects at every level. But I've been excited to open the minor league box scores every day this year because I feel like we have a lot more prospects. You know, Ross did a great job in the Liriano trade, adding two guys in, you know, and Reese McGuire and Harold Ramirez that are prospects. We signed Lourdes Gurriel. You know, Steven knows about, who's, you know, an exciting, you know, bat that we need to figure out where he's going to play, but an exciting bat. And then we had what I think time will tell was a really good draft last year. So you got guys like Bo Bichette playing next to, you know, Vladdy Jr., you know, in Lansing, which is exciting. So up and down the system, we're not where we need to be. We need to have, you know, a draft this year where we have 5 picks in the top 100 or close to that. You know, we need to have another good draft this year, and then we need to have another one the year after that, and we have to, you know, kill it in Latin America this year and in the international signings because we're, you know, the penalty is off that we got for signing Vladdy. So we have full money to spend internationally this year. And we need to keep looking for every way to add talent to the system. So when I think about what's important for the Blue Jays right now, it's kind of a duality, right? Like right now we need to win. We need to win at the major league level, without a doubt. And, you know, all of Ross's focus. But at the same time, you know, we need to build a strong farm system that is flush with talent, that provides a sustainable championship team and allows us to balance age on the roster and has a mix of young guys, guys in their prime, and veteran guys that are all there for different reasons. And so it's a good question. And we're not where we need to be. But we're, by every subjective, you know, published, you know, every magazine, we've taken jump. And objectively, in my opinion, we're better than we were last year, and we're moving in the right direction.
Mark, talk, backstage we talked, you know, and there are a lot of names here that everybody here would be familiar with, Telez and Bichette and Guerrero and Connor Green and those names. But we were talking about the catcher, Jansen.
Dan Jansen was a guy that is a makeup guy. You know, I think everyone kind of felt, hey, maybe he's a backup guy, you know, but you need a few stories, you know. So I mentioned Leblebijan is at AAA. We kind of pushed up there because we had an opportunity, and he's always been a great defender, and he started, you know, really hitting in Buffalo. So somewhere along the line, we need like one or two or three guys, because there are going to be some guys that are disappointing too. That's just the nature. That's why they're called prospects, you know. But we need a couple guys to jump up and surprise us, and Dan Jansen's one of those guys because of the, you know, the makeup, how hard he's worked. He's in the Florida State League. He's an elite, you know, leader of the staff and receiver, a good thrower, and he started to hit. He started to really hit a little bit too. So interesting, between him and McGuire, now we've got, you know, two catchers at those two levels that, you know, we think both guys have a chance, you know, to be everyday guys, both obviously a few years away, but, you know, that's exciting.
All right, I've got another one over here.
Hey, how did you first get your start in baseball, and what's the best way to get a break in baseball analytics and in a career in baseball now?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think, in case you haven't noticed, I'm very old. So my starts, you know, when young people come to me and ask me how to get started, I always say, well, first of all, you know, when I got started, there was 26 teams, not 30. That's like hard to imagine. It was 1991, 92. It took me a year and a half of trying to get in. There was no Theo Epstein. There weren't guys. It was like guys that played. And guys from like the baseball's five families, the McPhails, the Bavezis, the Quins. It was like these eminent families that kind of ran the game, and that was really it. So there was no path necessarily for me to get in. But John Hart, who's the president of baseball ops for the Braves now, and Dan O'Dowd, who's on the MLB Network, who was GM of the Rockies for a long time, they were the two lead baseball guys with the Indians, and they just gave me a shot with a, you know, a no-titled, entry-level, cubicle dweller, you know, no salary. And we happened to be right when the Indians in 1992 were on the verge, 2 years later, of getting really good. You know, in those mid-90s teams that won six of seven divisions and two American League championships. So I benefited by being in a situation where we grew so fast that, you know, I found myself running the farm system at like 26 years old. It was ridiculous, you know, and because those guys believed in me, you know, and gave me a great opportunity. The advice I give is, I guess, the same one I give to anybody almost that wants to get in any business, which is, you know, smart, hardworking, and passionate. That's just the baseline. Like, every single resume we get is smart, hardworking, and passionate. So to think about how to get in, I would think about, how do you differentiate yourself? So if you are analytical and that's the side you want to get into, you know, you need to publish. You need to write articles that get the attention, because believe me, the guys in the front office are reading everything. They're devouring Fangraphs. They're devouring Hardball Times. They're looking at Baseball Prospectus. They're looking at everyone, and they're reading, and they're looking for someone that can make us better. And it doesn't matter where that comes from. So I talk a lot about humility and openness and creating a learning culture. And I think if you are humble and you are open, you recognize there's someone anywhere that can make you better. And there should be a thirst from an organization to want to get better every day. And where that information can come from can be anywhere. So I think it's up to individuals that want to get in to demonstrate that they have the ability to make us better in some way, with some skill set, with some experience, you know, with some knowledge that we don't have in the front office right now.
All right, I've got one more.
Hello, Mark.
How you doing?
I know we're 2-10 or 2-12, whatever we are. But
Steven's already got us.
I've had this question since I bought my tickets, and I was just wondering, what was your off-season plan? Like, we have Kendry Morales.
I should have known when you walked up with a beer and cheered for yourself.
No, no, no.
I was in big trouble right away.
We're all a bunch of swing and misses. So I just want to know what the offseason plan was going in.
It was to win.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, the offseason was to build off a core of players that had been successful over two seasons and to recognize that we had nine, you know, free agents and a lot of holes we had to fill, to do the best job we could with Joe Smith and Jay Howell to, you know, plug the bullpen gaps and, you know, then also look at, you know, initially try to sign Edwin when we couldn't sign Edwin, you know, bring Jose back because we really felt like he was going to bounce back in a meaningful way. Still felt like that going all the way through spring training and still believe in the guy today. Kendrys Morales has actually been pretty good. He hasn't been as good as he can be, but been pretty good. But veteran hitter, you know, leader, you know, a guy that, you know, puts up a quality at bat, has played first base probably a little better than we thought. And Steve Pierce, you know, a guy that we thought was a good professional hitter if he just stayed healthy and still think Steve's going to hit. Again, it's, you know, we're 10 games in. So, you know, a lot was dependent on the core of players who were already here, you know, and have had a lot of success over the last 2 years and just trying to complement them the best way we can. It's not unlimited resources, either with our player development system or with money. So you do the best you can to balance the needs we had. But it's always, like I said to two questions ago, it's kind of a dual goal, was that and continue to work on building that farm system up wherever we possibly can. So trying not to trade more young talent, because we ultimately want to get to a point that we have a sustainable championship team. But it is to win.
No, that was a great joke. I think I have a question that was a bit off book. Do you want to read that out for me?
Uh-oh.
It's fine.
Okay.
No, it's fine.
And you're sure I can read?
Go ahead.
Okay. Ashley, now that you've had the opportunity to make fun of me, will you give me the opportunity to redeem myself? Possibly over a Mill Street. Adam. I was waiting for the...
The rule is you have to put your last name on the question, though, and there's no last name, so sorry.
Sorry, Adam. Rookie move.
You should get it done was put the phone number on there, Adam. All right, I'm at the back of the room with the next question. And what's your name and where are you from? Oh, this is Brian. Toronto via Halifax. All right, cheers to you.
This question, thanks for being here, all three of you. But this question is actually for Dan and to a lesser extent, Stephen. Dan, at the mothership, obviously... sorry, Mark. Listen, I could ask you 100 questions, and I'm sure everybody has one, but I'm giving you a break, so you're welcome. Dan, at the mothership, obviously there's an important relationship with the league itself. But when you're here working for Sportsnet, Rogers Sportsnet, there's more of a direct line to the team. And given the current climate, how delicate is it when you're in the booth or when you're on, you know, the various platforms on the radio or, you know, the Connected Show? That or Central, yeah, sorry. I still call Sportsnet Sports Desk, so...
By the mothership, you mean ESPN, I assume, for those who may not know. So my other job.
But how do you balance that with your critique or your criticism or your fair assessment even?
It is a balance, and I'm sure, you know, Mark probably went through that for many years in Cleveland, too, with the announcers that are there. There are some markets where the announcers work for the team. There are some where they work for the television station or the radio station, and increasingly the lines are blurred because we all work for the same company right now. But... I don't want to be, you know, I can't go on the air tomorrow night when I do the Red Sox game and say everything is great, guys. I mean, that would be insulting to you guys. I mean, and it's not the case. But I you know, you want to stop well short of personal attacks or anything like that. I mean, I've always tried my first time when Buck and I were doing games on TSN back in the 90s, the Jays were always, it always felt like they were 82-80 or 80-82. They were always kind of good, but not quite good enough. And you had to tell it like it is, and I think I'm kind of a middle of the road kind of guy. I'm not going to try to sell you something that isn't sellable, but I'm not going to go out of my way, obviously, to make things sound worse than they are. I think that's just the way I am. You know, everybody's different. There are some announcers, and we can all think of a couple who are unfailingly positive, and there are some who are more critical. But I think I try to play it kind of straight down the line. I mean, you do have to walk into the clubhouse the next day. Well, you don't have to, I guess. Some broadcasters don't walk into the clubhouse before the game. But I, every game I do, I think I should be in the clubhouse. And if anybody wants to, you know, discuss with me something that I said, they're more than entitled to do that. But I try to just, you know, say what I see, kind of play it down the middle of the road. And you know, a moment may arise where Mark and I haven't had this. I'm only doing 30 games a year, but I may go to Mark and say, hey, how did you feel about that? Or can we discuss something? Or Mark may come to me and say, you know, I think that was over the line. And you know, like Mark said, he's not the only old person sitting up here on the stage. We've all been at this. Yes. I guess he and I got into baseball right about the same time, him on the baseball side and me on the broadcasting side. And I think if it ever came to a conversation, I think we would both be able to have that kind of a conversation.
Yeah, the principles, I think the principle of fair comment applies, right? And that's, look, I worked, I'm the oldest person up here, but I worked in the newspaper business for a long time, which had no, you know, I had no affiliation in theory. Sometimes politically it did, but not in terms of sports. And the principle of fair comment was what applied there, which is, you know, and again, within fair comment in terms of a sports franchise is, you know, all the stuff we talk about here, right? It's really everything, including whether, you know, people should be fired or hired, including whether the payroll is sufficient to compete, including, you know, all of the stuff we talk about with a sports franchise. That isn't different, as far as I'm concerned, no matter who's signing the paycheck. So, you know, that's part of the swirl around sports, right? That's part of why we get involved. It's not just the spectacle of the game; it's the conversation around the game. And, you know, like Rogers is going to report their first quarter numbers tomorrow morning. I will have nothing to say about that, though it looks pretty good right now from what I can see. But you might want to comment on that, right, Mark? Yeah, exactly. No. But in terms of there's no kind of corporate imperative to say good things when things are bad. I think
that's clear.
Yeah. Well, it's no, but it makes sense, right? Like people aren't stupid, and the churn around a team in good times or bad is part of what that's part of the deal. That's part of what they bought, part of what they own. So. This vigorous conversation we have around the Toronto Blue Jays, which right now is you know a different conversation than it was maybe 12 months ago, is that's fine and no one's going to come on and say the sky's blue when the clouds are forming. It's just
the only bad conversation is no conversation.
Yeah, well that's correct, right? And we're in a time when people care passionately about this team in large numbers, and that's
which is great for
us. We have lived through other times, correct, Dan?
Yes, we have lived through much different times, but nobody. At the Blue Jays or nobody at the Blue Jays has ever said to me, say this or don't say that. Not once. In the 7 years I did it in the 90s or last year, this year, I did have a player who shall remain nameless once phone the broadcast booth during a game because he was upset about something I said. And we
I got to find out who that
was. Say the name.
I've got some
name.
Ideas.
Say the name.
Come on.
Come on.
Hey. Not a chance. Not a chance.
An initial, a first initial.
There's not enough Mill Street organic beer in this theater for me to cough up that story.
All right, I've got our next question up here.
Thanks, Carly. Really enjoying my first pitch talks.
Welcome.
Yeah, got a rookie.
Not a paid sponsor.
Not a paid sponsor. Here with my buddies from York Mills Collegiate, actually, Dan.
York Mills Collegiate, there you go.
Yeah.
That's right.
My question is to Mark, actually, Mr. Shapiro.
Mark.
Okay, Mark.
We've already established that I'm old.
now, you seem to be an advocate for player health with your high-performance team you brought into the Blue Jays. Just wondering if you could let us behind the curtain with the CBA negotiations. I believe the shorter regular season was on the table. And obviously it didn't get through. But I wonder what your opinion is. I feel having fewer games would build in more rest time, especially for an older team, a more experienced team like ours, like the Blue Jays. And just wondering what your opinion on that was.
Well, I mean, it's a good question. There's a lot within your question. I could comment on quite a few things, but I'll stick to just the one part you asked about, which is the length of schedule, the length of the season, number of games. So the one thing that was talked about was, and the one thing that's going to happen next year is there's going to be a longer season, not longer in number of games, but in more off days. That's going to create some scheduling challenges for the You know, the cities that are cold weather cities without, you know, a roof. I think there's a lot of ways to look at it. I think the way the game has evolved for a lot of different reasons, the schedule is probably a pretty tough one, and it would not be a bad thing to go to 156 games. I think I'm not sure statistics that were sacred for a while are as sacred now for a variety of reasons that we all know about in maybe the 90s, so that we probably could cut back. Now, it's easy for me to say that because I don't own a team, you know, and people that own teams that make a whole lot of money on, you know, losing those games, by and large, don't agree with me. So I always say, listen, when it comes down to those negotiations, while I have a voice, I'm not an owner or a player. You know, I'm someone that loves the game of baseball and cares deeply about the game and above all wants to see the game get played and protected and not suffer because we're fighting over the pie. So it's a challenge to settle on those things in a CBA. That wasn't enough of a priority for either the owners or the players in this negotiation. It may be at some point.
You know, the amazing thing, the story I told about the program that I found from the first game in 1977, so I flipped through it, and the schedule for the Blue Jays is in the program. So this comes out April 7th. In the schedule, there were 10 scheduled doubleheaders for the Blue Jays that year, and that was par for the course. That's the way it was back then, and I don't mean day-night. I mean doubleheaders. Wow. Twi-night, and 5 of the 10 were on weekdays. Like, you'd have, like, a Wednesday 5:05 doubleheader. I mean, for a kid, what was better, you know? And I was that kid. I took the 53 to Finch Station, the subway to King, the streetcar to the X, and walked and got my bleacher tickets at the X, like a lot of the older people and more experienced people in the crowd did here as well tonight. But again, if you have 10 doubleheaders, you have 10 fewer gates for the owners. And I think we'd all like to go back in time and change things. And then you look at the schedule, and they were off, like, I mean, every week you had an off day. Some weeks you had two off days because you had all those doubleheaders. But it's hard to change things
but
back
the,
to the way
the grind of the schedule does, you know, factor into probably how you should build a roster, one, as far as balancing age, and two, I think creates an opportunity for gaining a competitive advantage because I always felt this way. Like, I felt like when I was in Cleveland, I felt like, listen, the Yankees may double our spend, but if our team's on the field and theirs isn't, we get a chance to beat them, you know, because we were going to be younger and, you know, we were going to maybe focus on some other things. So I still feel like if we're able to build out this concept of putting the player, a player-centered model of performance where we individualize performance for our players and we balance that with how we construct a roster, there are potential competitive advantages and they don't exist in big ways anymore. You know, analytics is no longer an advantage. It's just trying to keep up or maybe look for some small one. So it's really trying to find 25, 30 small advantages, and I still feel like there's an opportunity for us there.
All right, next up.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for coming out tonight. Quick question. Biggest challenge, surprise since you started working with the Toronto Blue Jays?
Biggest what surprise?
Challenge or surprise.
Biggest
learning experience.
I'm not sure, you know, I would call it a challenge, and there haven't been a whole lot of surprises. I gave a lot of thought before I got here, and I've said this last year, and I know it can sound a little corny, but, you know, I looked at everything that was in place here before making a decision to leave a place after 24 years, and it was a very careful decision for me and my family, not one that was quick or frivolous. And part of the unique opportunity to not just represent a city but to represent a country and know that you're the only one of 30 teams that even has anything close to that, that was certainly a unique driver in the decision. But then to come in last year and to feel that, maybe to feel the responsibility and the pressure that comes with that, but to look up in Seattle and see that stadium full of Blue Jay fans, to look at Cleveland and see that stadium more than half Blue Jay fans. I mean, there's no team in Major League Baseball that has that, none. And there is no executive in the U.S. that understands what that is. I'm telling you right now, they don't understand it. It's abstract to them. But to be here and feel that, tangibly feel that, is incredible, and it's a responsibility, and it's something that it was a part of the reason for coming here, and it's been incredible to feel.
I was just wondering, it looks like Jose is not really swing the bat too smoothly. So how badly is that injury from the WBC affecting him?
I mean, I don't think that has affected him, but there's obviously what I see right now, and Stephen talked about earlier, there's, you know, on the positive side of things, clearly a different guy than he was last year. Like, moving a lot better. You see it in his defense. You see it on the bases. Physically a lot stronger, which leads me to believe he was impacted last year a lot more by his shoulder injury than anyone realized. You can see that in his throwing and in his swing. People don't recognize, you know, necessarily how much that can impact your swing. You know, I think it's more, you know, he's in a slump, and it's a slump to start the season. He's in between a lot, you know. He's always been a guy that sits on pitches. That's kind of, you know, part of his game. He's a smart hitter. Smart hitters tend to do that. I watched Eddie Murray do that, you know, for a long time, you know, riding into the Hall of Fame. And, you know, Jose is a guy that does that too. Right now he's kind of in between, you know, and I think some of that also comes from an incredible amount of pride he feels to want to show everybody that, you know, what he's capable of doing. And because the rest of the team's struggling and he wants to pick guys up.
Okay, thank you.
Mark, what's the role of, you know, you've got, when you've got veteran guys who have had tremendous success, you know, Jose would be one, Donaldson, Tulowitzki, you know, Russ Martin's been a great offensive player as a catcher at times in his career. What's the role of a hitting coach with guys like that?
I think, you know, what you want to do is those guys know themselves. So it's asking those guys questions. Let's walk back to when you're locked in, when you're feeling good, what are you doing, what's your routine, what pitches are you looking for, how are you feeling when you see the ball, you know, how do you utilize it? It's wanting to know that hitter. I think Sean Casey was in spring training. He's one of my closest friends in the game, and he said the best hitting coach he ever had was Dave Magadan. And Dave Magadan would, you know, walk up when he first got there, and he says, give me three things you're doing when you're going good, when you're going as good as you possibly go. And this is in spring training. Before you're going good or bad, he goes, okay, I got it. Now I'm going to remember that. When things go bad, you know, I know. And the one thing that people, you know, function as a performer, all of us are performers in different things. We're really conscious of what we're doing when things are not going well. We tend to just, you know, enjoy the ride when things are going well, and not be as conscious of the routines that we're in, how we're feeling, what we're thinking, what we're doing. So I think, you know, the best coaches have a way of making sure guys are conscious of what they're doing when they're going well.
Hi, I just I wanted to know if hitting is actually contagious. I mean, you have Kendrys Morales, Steve Pearce, guys you brought in that you thought or expected to be good hitters right off the get-go, and team average is below 200 at this point in time. Is hitting actually contagious?
Well, I'm pretty sure those guys didn't cause the demise of our hitters, those two guys.
Fair enough, but...
But, no, the hitting is contagious piece probably stems from good guys that care, putting too much pressure on themselves, trying to pick each other up. And just as, you know, Steven said earlier, there's that fine line. Like, baseball, you can't play when you're tense. You know, you need to be relaxed. You need to be athletic in your swing. You need to let the movements and the motions, you know, translate that made you successful. And, you know, we've got guys that, hey, they feel it. You know, they feel the start we've had. They feel the slump we're in offensively. Every guy's trying to make up to get the big hit, to make up for the last guy, overthinking, all those things, you know. So it's got to get to a breaking point where guys feel a little more comfortable, get back to recognizing that they're not going to make up for five games with one game.
I think this is a rebuttal.
Question, I'm sorry. So with JD out of the lineup, who do you expect to be the guy that steps up to maybe spark that team hitting?
Well, no one can replace when you have the guy who's one of the best offensive performers in the game over the last, you know, 4 years. No one's going to replace that. So, you know, it has to be just, you know, finding other ways to score multiple guys. And, you know, that's the issue. I mean, it's not – we don't have a slump with, like, two guys. We've got, you know, four or five holes in the lineup. We're getting almost no production. That's – As Steven said, that's unheard of, and that's why I said that's not going to go on, you know.
Thanks for coming here tonight, Mark. So earlier today on The Fan on Baseball Central, Morosi was talking about a couple other teams that got off to a rough start, the 08 Tigers and the 2012 Phillies. And he was talking about how the Phillies, they delayed the rebuild because they were afraid to trade players – who the fans would react negatively to seeing them be traded, and he named Cole Hamels. I'm not going to ask you out of a rebuild because I know the answer, it's not time. But how much does potential fan reaction weigh into personnel decisions that you make?
I think you've got some history on that one, Mark, I believe. Yeah.
I mean, it's a great question. And I don't think there's one way to answer it. You know, I think it's largely situational. Everything you do is for the fans, everything, you know, and everything you do is ultimately to provide, you know, the fans the ability to have a parade, you know, to celebrate the last game played, to watch players, you know, pigpile on the mound, you know, after the last pitch is thrown of a major league season. Sometimes, you know, because you have one eye on today, which is the only thing that players, coaches, and fans are thinking about, and you have to have one eye on tomorrow, you know, to build something, and you're trying to be objective, you make decisions that, you know, fly in the face of that, and they're tough for people that are only focused on now to accept or digest. But every single decision is made with the intent of, we want to be that team to win the last game played in a championship season. And anything short of that is still disappointing, no matter when, you know, it comes. That's the only way I can answer that. You know, is that you're always balancing those two things, but you're always conscious of, you know, who you're doing it for. You know, we're not doing it in a vacuum. We're not doing it for me. You know, we're doing it for you guys. And so ultimately, you know, if we don't objectively feel like we can win, you know, then you have decisions like that to make.
But you did, with a different ownership situation, and that's important to point out. But you
in a different market.
In a different market. You flew into the face of some pretty difficult stuff with the fans in Cleveland, correct?
Yeah, but came out in 3 years.
You did.
With a team that won the most, you know, was almost won the most games in baseball, you know, and over a three-year period was really good. So I just didn't see any choice there. I mean, it wasn't a market like Toronto, so there wasn't the ability to supplement with free agents. There wasn't the ability to offset some of the trades you would make with, you know, guys you could go out and get elsewhere. So, you know, we had to, at that point, going through what we were going through, we had to build it organically. We had to build from within. And there was no roadmap. We were coming at the end of a seven-year run that was incredible. Because of that, we picked late in the draft every year. We traded a ton of young guys, and we were heading towards a cliff. And so preempting it kind of gave us, you know, an infusion of talent at the upper levels that recreated picking high in the draft without having to lose for five straight years to pick high in the draft. There are other models like the Cubs, like the Astros, that, you know, pick top in the draft that, you know, lost a whole lot to get those picks, you know, to get to where they are. So there's multiple ways to do it. There's not one way to do it.
All right, I've got Lewis.
Tim Raines was on earlier, and he was the Hall of Famer, and he was talking about how he doesn't respect any catchers, which I found was amusing. And I know we want to try and manufacture some runs, and is there any possible way of finding out if there's any, like I know we're last in the American League in stolen bases, so is there any, like, speed coming up or anything like that that could help?
I mean, I think it, as we think about building the team moving forward, you know, having multiple ways to score, you know, is certainly, you know, is good. Ultimately, I don't think there's one way to build a team or one way to do it. You know, the goal is to score more runs and prevent more runs, you know, and ultimately, you know, improve your run differential. And if you walk into a situation, you look at the team, you try to take what you've got and build it as best you can with what's in place. A lot of times the way a farm system evolves, you're not necessarily, you know, you don't necessarily predict how players arrive at the same time or what types of players they are. You know, it's someone that can win with a pitching first mentality for 4 or 5 years can then come back and have dominant offensive teams and win that way. So, again, I think, you know, yes, it's, you know, pitching, I mean, having that speed as a dimension helps, but you got to get on base and to make the speed make a difference. And again, I think if I had my choice, I'd probably blend, you know, a mix of athleticism and speed, you know, with power and with run production. And but scoring more runs is the goal ultimately.
The movie Moneyball, there was so many inaccuracies, including the fact that they did not allow Brad Pitt to portray you. How upset were you when you realized that actually he was not going to be you in the film?
Thank goodness we have the Moneyball question. No one would ever confuse me with Brad Pitt. Reed Diamond, however, is a dead ringer for me. That movie, I think anyone ever read the book The Blind Side? And they made a movie out of that,
yep,
too. And
yep.
So Michael Okafor, I think I pronounced it right. So I heard him once say, you know, they said, why did you write your own book? Because he wrote a book. And he said, he looked at him and he said, well, because the book was fiction, you know, and the movie was even a fantasy. So I don't think that about Moneyball. I mean, the book was an exaggeration and the movie, you know, moved a step further beyond exaggeration, because to shorten, you know, 4 years into 90 minutes, you got to take a lot of liberties with what actually happens. I probably didn't think enough about it when they sent me the script and said, hey, are you okay with this? And my response was, well, this isn't true. I wasn't in the GM. I was the assistant GM. Billy was never in my office. And I recommended Paul DePodesta. He didn't come and, like, steal him from our office. So, but it didn't sound like a good movie or book that way. So they kind of changed the story a little bit. So.
Any chance you write your own book?
It's funny. Like, I've never felt like that's been... You know, something. I'm always trying to learn from, you know, other people. I never felt like what I have to say or what I've done is worth, you know, reading. I'm always trying to help people, you know, wherever I can, and pass the wisdom on. And the wisdom is usually a lot of things you did wrong, as well as the things you did right. Parenting is a lot about that, you know, a chance to do that all the time. And so is mentoring, you know, people that you hire along the way. But definitely not something I've thought about. I feel like I've got a lot of life to live before I'm writing about it.
Your dad wrote a pretty good book.
He's written 4, yeah.
Yeah.
We still pull out, you know, the one, the Dare, you know, his first book, The Power of Nice, is an incredible negotiation book, and it's got, like, a great, great checklist in there for negotiation and preparation, and we still use that. Yeah, I know there's a bunch of teams that use it.
All right, and Mark, before we let you go, one quick question. After 162 games this year, what will you be able, or what do you want to be able to hang your hat on? Leave everyone with a message.
Playing
here.
More.
Playing more. All right. The off season, the goal was to win, and playing more is the goal for the regular season. I like it.